now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Ezra Peregrine.
And I'm Andy Thomas. Andy Thomas, oh my god, I'm Andy Thomas. I'm Andy Shorten. Today on the show, Emperor...
Elagabalus, darling. Yeah, our next quistery. I bring you an insight into this emperor.
And it's nearly time for Pride.
Darren is here from Bristol Pride to bring you up to date on this year's festival.
All that and more today here on Shout Out. Oh my god, Carl's going to kill me. I'm about to use my maiden name.
I haven't said
Andy Thomas in years.
Yeah, I can see the smoke coming out of his nostrils.
What's on the script?
Screaming gay dragon.
What's on the script?
It says Andy Shilton.
It does, yeah.
What, and you still said?
And I still, wow. I don't know, I haven't done that in
1 week we need to change it to Stilton and see if he realises.
I have genuinely had that on an application form before.
You've written Stilton,
No, they did, yeah.
Likely story.
I'd like to ask why you're called Stilton.
It's Shilton.
No, I know, but people call you Stilton.
That's no, because if you write it really quick, it can look like it. You're bad handwriting.
Okay, I was just thinking about why you were called that. I mean, all I can think of the.
I mean, they probably wrote Shilton.
Blue veins in it.
What are you trying to say?
It's smelly.
What are you trying to say?
Dark hole.
I think I'm just going through what that actually signifies.
Yes, burn, might drop, exit to the left.
Actually, no one's called me Stilton at all.
No,
but they called you Smelly Old Cheese, didn't they?
They call me...
Stephanie Barney, redo DJ Extraordinaire.
My nickname was Barney.
Barney. Yeah. Oh, isn't that your son's nickname?
Yeah, it is.
So, we've got Barney and Barney. Anyway, how is everyone on this very lovely Thursday evening?
Yes.
Yeah?
Nice, isn't the weather nice? It's
turned lovely,
again.
Actually. It's nice when you're just sat.
Yeah, brilliant when you're going to go on holiday shortly, isn't it?
I am going on holiday shortly, yes. Thank you to Disneyland Paris.
Play with Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
And you're going to dress up as a little mermaid.
Dopey. Steph's going to... Uh-oh. Steph's going to be Yzma from Emperor's New Groove because she's... She's got a dark side. At some point, I'll accidentally be a llama.
But
it's going
to
be an
if
event.
If you had to be a dwarf, which one would you be? If you're dopey.
I'd be a mix of dopey, happy, and grumpy. And I think Steph would be Doc, happy, and...
I'm amazed you know the names. I only know Grumpy.
Sneezy. And the witch. Sorry, that wasn't in the question, was it? You know, the one with the apple. The temptress. Because all trans women are wicked.
Of course. I heard that.
I've heard that. Who keeps saying that? I've seen it in the news. There's really important
author,
newspapers. J.K. You know, rhymes with rum. They keep going on about it.
Yeah.
I had to think for a minute. Trying to run.
Yeah, it's everywhere. We've got to watch out. But yeah, we are going to Disney, and I don't know if I'm going to dress up yet, but now I feel like I need to. Because it's a lovely magical place.
She's getting on. You're going to have to take care of her on the roller coasters, you know. You have to sit on the lap or something.
Yeah,
so
I don't
want to
get in whiplash.
Out.
I'll be taking me Zimmer.
Okay. Yeah. I'll be walking 5 metres behind.
Yes.
Yeah, that's literally the only reason. Yeah, it's going to be great. We're going to be going in an hour early, which means basically we have an hour of very few queues, and then after that we don't worry about rides so much. We just
out of my way. I'm old, trans, and female. I'm very dangerous.
Very,
very dangerous.
Ask a certain author. Very dangerous.
Yes, yeah, very dangerous. But at least I can actually walk in the ladies' loo across Europe and not worry about some
you can indeed
attacking me from the rear end.
Oh. Yes. I was a bit stumped then.
They don't really have any turfs in Europe, do they?
Not really. Not, I mean, I'm sure there are.
Not a big current.
Well, France goes very up and down, left wing, right wing, doesn't it?
It does. It's quite polarised.
But I've
always felt
safe.
And Italy's got a very right wing government at the moment, but the Italians themselves seem to be reasonably okay.
I've always felt safer in Italy than I do in the UK.
Yeah, so me too. Even with Meloni in Italy, I feel very safe in Italy.
Who I thought was called Baloney until the other day. I wasn't going to admit to that. Genuine faux pas. Baloney.
She did have a pop at lesbian couples removing any children they might have having two female names on a birth certificate.
Yeah.
Had to have the father. But they've withdrawn that because the courts have said, sorry, can't do that.
Oh my gosh, sorry, but now.
Yeah.
Like, it's unbelievable.
It's been nice to see the backlash against them, though, from everyone coming out going, no, actually, this isn't okay. You can't say
also, this
like
isn't
that.
Legal.
No.
This isn't
well,
human
that's why
Faulkner's
withdrawn
right.
the guidance because they were about to get into trouble. In fact, they are in trouble because they're being sued.
Yeah. No, I believe it's what they're called, the Law Project.
Good Law Project.
Good Law Project.
They're going after them. So anyway, we ought to find out about
What's their name?
Oh, their name, yes.
Elagabag.
Elagabalus. Elagabalus.
How the hell did you find it?
Elagabalus.
She went back. She's got a TARDIS and went back to 200 AD.
Elagabalus. You're welcome. Enjoy.
Well, shall we have a listen to this quiz for you?
Hello and welcome to Quistory, where we explore the lives of individuals who defied societal norms, bent gender binaries, and lived lives so radical that history almost buried them. Today we journey back nearly 2,000 years to ancient Rome to the short, chaotic and deeply fascinating reign of Elagabalus, an emperor whose life was as flamboyant and as uncontainable as the god they worshipped. This is not just a story of power and politics, though those elements are plenty, it's also a queerstory, possibly trans, but also a story of gender defiance and sexual fluidity echoing across centuries into today's conversations around identity, expression and selfhood. Elagabalus was born around 203 CE in the Roman province of Syria, in a city called Emesa, modern-day Homs. They were originally named Sextus Varius Avitus Bassanus, a mouthful of a name for a child born into a priestly family. Their mother, Julia, and grandmother, Julia, were members of the powerful Severan dynasty. But it wasn't just politics that defined the younger Elagabalus's early life, it was religion. They were the high priest of the sun god, Elagabal, a deity venerated in Emesa and depicted as a black conical stone, likely a meteorite. When the emperor Caracalla was assassinated and the usurper Marcrinus took the throne, Julia Maesa took action. She spread rumours that Elagabalus was actually Caracalla's illegitimate son, a calculated political lie designed to build legitimacy. The army loyal to Caracalla's memory turned on Marcrinus and declared the 14-year-old Elagabalus emperor. Imagine that, a teenager priest to a foreign god suddenly finds himself the ruler of a vast Roman Empire. The year was 218 CE, Elagabalus was 14 years old, and nothing would ever be the same again. Now, if you read most traditional Roman sources, Cassius Dio, Herodian, and the infamous Historia Augusta, you'll hear about decadence, perversion, indulgence, and chaos. Elagabalus, they claim, was a tyrant, more interested in parties, orgies, and fashion than war, governance, or Roman tradition. They replaced Jupiter with Elagabal, tried to marry different gods and goddesses through ceremonial unions, and scandalised Rome with their personal life. But under the layers of Roman morale and panic, we find more a person who might today be understood as gender non-conforming, trans-feminine, and or queer. Elagabalus is said to have married at least 5 times to both women and men. One of the most striking relationships he had was with a man named Heracles, a former slave and chariot driver. Elagabalus reportedly referred to Heracles as their husband and asked to be called his wife. In another case, they were described as playing the role of the bride in a marriage to another man. But it goes further. Cassius Duo, a senator and contemporary historian, writes that Elagabalus went so far as to ask the physicians to contrive a woman's vagina in his body, promising them large sums of money for doing so. This is staggering because, if accurate, it would be the earliest recorded instance in Western history of someone requesting gender-affirming surgery. Of course, the surgical knowledge of the time couldn't accommodate such a request, and it's unclear how literal the source is, but the desire expressed here is unmistakably gendered. Elagabalus wasn't just playing with gender roles for fun. They may have deeply identified as a woman, or at least as someone who didn't fit into the binary mould of Roman masculinity. So we ask the question, how should we refer to Elagabalus? Well, this is one of the most debated questions in queer and trans historiography. When we talk about historical figures who transgress gender, how do we navigate the terminology? Elagabalus never used the word transgender. That word didn't exist. Neither did non-binary, queer, or the framework we use today to understand gender identity. But they did repeatedly describe themselves as a woman, preferring to be called a lady, and may have sought to physically transition. In that light, many modern scholars and activists suggest it's valid and respectful to refer to Elagabalus using she/her pronouns or they/them, acknowledging the limitations and fluidity of the language back then. Of course, some argue against this. They point out the unreliability of the sources, most of which are deeply biased and possibly exaggerated, they say. They were written by Roman elites who despised Elagabalus's Syrian origins, religious devotion, and gender expression. In their eyes, Elagabalus was not just a bad emperor, but an unnatural one, so we tread a delicate path. Here on Queerstory, we try to meet historical figures where they stood, and so for the rest of this episode, we'll refer to Elagabalus as they/them, with an acknowledgement that they may have identified as a woman. That said, they defy easy classification, and maybe that's the point. They didn't just break gender norms privately, they did so publicly, in a way that forced the empire to reckon with them. They wore makeup, donned lavish robes made of silk and adorned themselves with jewels and wigs. They held gender-bending rituals where roles of gods and goddesses were reversed. In one account, they held a banquet for guests where only women were allowed to recline in the traditionally male posture, while men were made to behave modestly, like Roman women. This wasn't just camp, it was performance with power. Elagabalus fused their identity as an emperor, priest, and gender nonconformist into one explosive persona. They embodied the god Elagabal not as servant, but as god's incarnation. Think about that, a gender nonconforming teenager ruling the Roman Empire while claiming to be the living embodiment of a queer foreign god. Is it any wonder the Roman Senate hated them? In 222 CE, after only 4 years off the throne, Elagabalus was assassinated at age 18. The plot was led by their grandmother, Julia, who had grown weary of the scandals and feared for the dynasty's survival. Elagabalus and their mother were killed by the Praetorian Guard, their bodies dragged through the streets of Rome and thrown into the Tiber River. Their memory was subjected to damnatio memoriae, the Roman custom of erasing a disgraced figure from history. Statues were destroyed, names scratched off monuments, paintings defaced. But even erasure is a form of fear and a form of acknowledgement. Despite Rome's best efforts, Elagabalus has never disappeared. They remain a lightning rod in Roman history, reviled, ridiculed, but unforgettable. And in the modern era, their story has found new audiences. Queer historians, trans writers, artists, and scholars have reimagined Elagabalus's not just as a scandalous figure, but as a martyr of gender expression, a rebel, a mirror. In 1972, Antonin Artaud called them the most beautiful monster in history. In 2020, a proposal was made to include Elagabalus in lists of historical trans figures. The debate continues. And stories like this matter because the history of trans and queer people didn't begin in the 20th century. It stretches back, winding through myth, legend, and fact. It lives in priestesses and shamans and emperors like Elagabalus, people who pushed the boundaries, not for spectacle, but because that's who they were. To see Elagabalus as a queer or trans figure is not to project modern categories backwards, it's to reclaim a part of our history that was buried, distorted, and shamed. Ella Gablis's story, messy, dramatic, tragic, is a reminder that queer and trans existence is not a new invention, it's ancient, it's resilient, and it's always challenged power. And as we fight today for rights, recognition, and the dignity to live authentically, Ella Gablis stares back from the pages of history, not just as a cautionary tale, but perhaps as a kind of ancestor, a warning, a beacon, a ghost in silk robes, whispering across time, I was here too. And that's it for today's Queerstory. If you enjoyed this episode, there's many more in the Shoutout catalogue, and there will be many more in the future. Until next time, remember, the past is not as straight as they try to tell you. Stay queer, stay curious.
Shout-out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout-out podcast.
Can someone tell me what the words are tonight?
I love the words.
So have we figured out what the phrase is for when the words aren't actually
I think
words?
Glossolia is something similar to that. Words, it's like speaking in tongues in religious practice is sometimes called that. But there are also a number of bands over the years that have actually spoken in confused lyrics or made up lyrics.
Like Whiter Shade of Pale by Procol Harum.
Well, that's just lyrics that really don't make any sense to anyone.
Well, unless you're high as a kite.
I wouldn't know.
Neither would I.
But if you're wondering what that is, that was called Now We Are Free by Hans Zimmer and Lisa Gerrard.
Very beautiful.
Very beautiful.
It is beautiful. And that entire score is wonderful, but also Hans Zimmer is just outstanding.
Yeah.
One did see Hans live.
Did you?
Yeah, one loved seeing Hans. Oh. Yeah. Hans is amazing live. Like, I just sat there in awe of his absolute gift that he's bestowed upon the world.
The one I'd love to see is André Rieu.
I've not seen André Rieu. Yeah.
I've seen him on Sky Telly.
Yeah, I've seen
on
him.
Sky
Telly. And he's got loads on YouTube.
Yeah, I've seen him on TV.
So, Carl actually took me to a live broadcast from the Maastricht, but it was broadcast to cinemas across Europe as well. And we went and actually watched it in the cinema, but it was live being performed in the Maastricht. I think that was our first anniversary after we got married.
God, lovely.
I want to see live in Verona.
Gosh, I know what's coming.
The Verona Coliseum.
Yes.
Tarandot by Puccini. I really want to see that. That is my favourite opera.
If you haven't heard it, listeners, or Andy and Terry, do. Because it is beautiful.
You have to like opera, I think.
Well, I don't think you have to like opera to appreciate it. Because because genuinely,
there's a lot of
skill.
Like.
In what they're doing. Mm. So I would say, you know, just press skip.
But Tarantino,
Puccini's. Settle for Steps the Musical.
Steps the Musical, right, yeah. Did you know, massively changing the subject, that there's now an AI virtual tour that allows you to feel like you are a passenger on Titanic?
I'm not sure I want to
I don't
see
know
that.
How, I don't
dark,
know.
Isn't
I,
it?
Yeah, and it's selling out.
Do you get
it's in London.
Do you get to feel what draining feels like?
Yeah, that's not. Can we get some new hair?
I wasn't going there. I was just trying to explain something about AI history.
Here's where Steph goes and gets a glass of water.
Yeah,
and
I was
gargles
following on from queer history here.
Anyway, right, let's get some new headlines.
This is Shoutout News. Welcome along.
An afternoon of lectures and presentations at London's Ethical Meeting Hall, Conway Hall, is to showcase aspects of women's history. On Saturday, June the 21st, A Woman's World will profile an unforgettable afternoon that challenges history's familiar narrative dominated by men. Discover the remarkable stories of fierce women who ruled, rebelled, explored and even killed, brought to life by a fantastic lineup of authors and historians, including Blessed Tessin Adams, Paula Akpan and Sarah Lonsdale. Tickets are £16 per head. For further information on the lectures and the rich range of subjects they will tackle, visit conwayhall.org.uk.
A news bulletin on the internet radio station Laser Hot Hits reports that French deputies in the National Assembly in Paris have voted for heavy, regulated and limited scenarios in which a suffering person can choose to end their life. The vote comes as Britain also struggles with the issue, the fault lines cracking across left and right, libertarian and authoritarian, religious and secular aspects of society. There is evidence that whilst many LGBTQIA people believe in the principle that religious groups should not per se dictate the parameters of what individuals can choose to do with their bodies, they nonetheless share a concern with disability campaigners, elderly people's associations and other representatives of vulnerable adults that in a capitalist society, pressure could not be applied to disabled people to opt for euthanasia.
A magazine article in counterculture journal Far Out, which focuses mainly on the 70s rock, art and pop scenes, looks back at Coombe Transmissions, the art collective founded by Genesis P. Orridge, who was described by some as non-binary decades before non-binary identities reached mainstream consciousness. C-O-U-M Transmissions were extreme radical questioners of nearly everything about society and lived in squats around London. However, unlike many other squatters, they pursued an unremittingly radical way of life. Clothes were all shared, there were no privacy barriers on toilets and showers. Far Out magazine says P. Orridge described their work as the bastardisation of music and modern musical technologies, as the band would take musical instruments, often second-hand ones that had been abandoned or broken, and completely reinvent their purpose. Another deliberate choice the group made was not to have a drummer in their musical performances because they associated drummers with excessively Western European rock. They did not want to trap their music into a specific genre, which would allow little for creative exploration. Today, COUM's Transmissions work is labelled as industrial music, which paved the way for other avant-garde genres like synth pop, techno and drum and bass to be normalised in mainstream media. The article on COUM Transmissions is available for all to read freely online.
For LGBTQIA plus activists who want to build a broad-based alliance against Trumpism in the United States comes an appeal for funds for a new campaign from Greenpeace International. The environmental NGO says last month President Trump signed an executive order to fast-track deep-sea mining in the US and international waters. The deep sea is the largest untouched ecosystem on Earth, home to ancient coral reefs, bioluminescent wildlife, and thousands of new species we're yet to discover. And it's one of our biggest allies in the fight against climate change. Our oceans are under threat, and if we don't act now, corporations could plunder the deep sea for profit. We need allies as an ocean defender and help with funds. In the wake of this latest assault on our planet, it's time to stand together and resist Trump's nature-wrecking agenda. It's outrageous. This executive order flies in the face of science, diplomacy, and plain common sense. Over 30 countries, including the UK, have called for a pause on deep-sea mining, recognising the huge and irreversible damage it could do. Remember, we've stopped this before and we can stop it again. Every government that's ever tried to start deep sea mining has failed. From Norway to Papua New Guinea, deep sea miners and their enablers have underestimated their opposition. Millions of us around the world have mobilised against them. This time will be no different. To learn more about this campaign, visit greenpeace.org/international.
On progressive petition website change.org, a group of cisgender women have come together under the title Not In Our Name and seek to reclaim feminism from hate groups and links to the extreme right or authoritarian left. They are close to their initial petition target of 5,000 signatures. Their manifesto is available for free at change.org, but in part reads, "We reject completely and categorically the active discrimination and exclusion of trans, non-binary and gender diverse people. Those who continue to target this minority group do not speak for us or represent our interests. They never have and they never will. Throughout our lives, we have endured harassment, discrimination, violence and abuse in countless forms, from childhood catcalls to workplace discrimination, from domestic violence to sexual assault, from being silenced in boardrooms or from being blamed for crimes committed against us. We know intimately that the real threat to women looks like cisgender men who abuse their power and are the real threat. We witness the devastating impact of anti-trans rhetoric, claimed predominantly aimed predominantly at trans women, that masquerades as feminism whilst advancing nothing but harm. We see politicians weaponising fear to avoid addressing the systematic issues that actually endanger women. We watch media outlets generate moral panic for profit whilst ignoring the epidemic of male violence that claims women's lives.
And finally, are few of our listeners who can say they don't like ice cream. Ben & Jerry's has long been a favourite brand due to its early uptake of fair trade, caring dairy membership, embrace of vegan choices and commitment to social change. Now, there is a petition online sponsored by the brand to which we need to alert you. The brand says, we know detention to be unsafe and that LGBTQI plus people seeking asylum are particularly at risk of harm. But right now, the government is reviewing its policies on keeping people safe in detention. Join us in telling ministers to protect LGBTQIA lives. To sign your support, visit benjerry.co.uk. And now you can be just that extra bit more smug when it comes to a cheeky ice cream.
Well, that's it for Shoutout News this week. We will be back with more same time, same channel next week. In the meantime, please keep tuned with Community Media for the best LGBTQIA plus content over the coming days. Why not visit us at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Steffi Barnett
and Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
Now, you all voted, and they listened, and they cast their votes, and it was a doozy pile all around. This is your Eurovision winner for this year. This is JJ with Wasted Love.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Wow. Oh, what an moment. Ending. That puts like hairs on the back of your neck, doesn't it?
It certainly so, does.
I hope you all had a very good Eurovision. We did. First time we've ever had a Eurovision party.
Just,
very
nice. Yeah. I just wish JJ had better pitch. It's
not nearly as good as yours.
Not nearly. He's incredible. Conchita's incredible. He is.
No, that's not Conchita.
No,
that's
and JJ. Conchita. Oh, sorry. Oh, no. Back in the drama.
Yeah, speaking of which, yes. Ez and I, the day after, we're looking at an ORF, which is the Austrian main channel, their equivalent BBC, of the BBC. Yeah. And JJ was doing an interview about his life and growing up and, you know, and singing. Mm. And then he went on to his parents. And the video we were watching, JJ is sat there talking to the interviewer of ORF and says that Tom, I can't remember Conchita Wurst's name. Tom.
Real name, yeah. But well, everyone remembers Conchita Wurst, though, aren't they?
So JJ said that name and they cut to a picture of Conchita before they became Conchita singing on stage. And said, oh, most people will know him as Conchita because he changed his act.
Thomas Neuwirth.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome.
Went on to do a different type of thing, you know, cabaret, and became Conchita. Now, me and Ez were absolutely flabbergasted, and we actually shed a tear because we thought Conchitaverse was the
story,
father of JJ. Yeah. And I think we got duped so easily because we wanted to believe it.
No, it looked so real. Like, I don't question everything all the time. Like, I was like, I wouldn't even have thought somebody would AI.
But do you now believe you were duped by AI then?
Yeah, because it's gone.
JJ was sat there
Seth spent 2 hours trying to find the video.
Yeah, saying those names. And then we went back to get it so we could post it, and it had gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah.
And we looked at the same interview from ORF, and it had changed, and the parental thing was about, you know, going to the Middle East and with his father, and wow, yeah, we were well and truly duped.
We were.
So just in case you were really excited like we were and thought that Conchitaverse were JJ's dad, I'm afraid it's not true.
But they are very close.
And there is a lovely, we played it on the show, do you remember, a few weeks ago, there's a lovely cross where Conchita and JJ sing together half of Rise Like a Phoenix and half of Wasted Love.
Yeah.
And it's astounding, isn't it? Absolutely astounding track. It's still up on YouTube. You can go watch it.
Yeah.
Part of this year's Eurovision. Mm. So it's gone a bit quiet, hasn't it? Because they were going to investigate the voting and the like. And
three countries complained.
Mm. Including the UK, apparently.
To say that it didn't look right. The Israeli vote
looked quite
fiddled.
Absolutely.
The televote, you mean? The public vote?
Yeah,
the
public vote.
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
We gave them 12 points.
It doesn't like, if you just think about this logically, like irrespective of politics even, it doesn't make sense. Let's take away the politics.
Wasn't that good a song.
Right, I was just about to say that, to be really, really blasé, because there is so much going on and I don't want to undermine anything that is happening politically. It's horrific. The song wasn't very good. So it doesn't make, to me, I like logic, it doesn't make sense. You know, top five, maybe.
But then I also don't... But, I mean, our song, I didn't think deserved nothing from the
I actually thought our song was very good, but it isn't. It's just not, it didn't have whatever that is.
And it's very odd that they allow every individual to vote 20 times.
Well, that's because they make the money over the phone line.
Yeah, I know, but it's still ridiculous.
As I know, one Eurovision one, I might have drunk three bottles of wine and had a very empty phone bill. Hey, man, Flynn.
Yeah, because some countries you can vote with the app, which is free. In the UK, you cannot.
Oh.
You have to do it by phone line, because we're one of the main contributors for the costs of it.
So. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's nice. It's nice to be involved.
But
and
the best person won, right?
Well, I personally thought it was my favourite song of the lot, but it was not the bookie's favourite. The bookie's favourite was the Swedish one about being in a sauna.
Yeah, but those songs are great. Like, I see, if that had been second, that would have been hilarious. Like, this is what Eurovision is. It's camp, it's curious, it's creative, and that's what I want to see on my telly.
I don't envy the job of the EBU, though, because it's very difficult to keep politics out of it.
Well, you can't.
The whole when you read the history of it, it was about bringing all the countries together after the World War II.
Yeah,
but I think by banning Russia because of the Ukraine invasion, set a precedent, but then it didn't because Israel was still.
And this is what the issue is. So it's always going to be political, and now it's more political.
It
than
is
ever.
Now, unfortunately.
I mean, EBU have brought that on themselves. Yes. Haven't they?
My personal opinion is this isn't okay. That these decisions or lack of are not okay. But a trans man winning, honestly, I literally fell off my sofa.
For me, though, it's not about him being trans.
No.
It's that song.
It's
just
not about,
phenomenal.
Absolutely not. But at a time where trans people's voices are being strangled, to have a young trans man who is so, so gifted win, to me, was just the most beautiful timing we could have ever hoped for.
Yeah. And you just heard the song. I mean,
it's
really
magic.
Puts hairs
he's
on the back
magic.
Of your neck.
And he's so lovely. Watch interviews of him. I've watched about, I don't know.
But we have had trans winners in the past, haven't we? Darna International.
Well, of course we have.
Yeah. She was one of the first, I think, wasn't she?
She was the first,
Yeah.
Much to the Russians' disgust. Yeah,
they just love it. Yeah.
Did they cut to black, if I remember?
I don't know if they cut to black. I mean, I know that in the 70s, when Jordan was a member of the EBU, they didn't want to recognise Israel's entry because of the politics between the two countries. So that when the Israeli singer took the stage, they just put a test card on.
Well, I mean, I think there's going to potentially be shift next year. Very hard to say. Thinking of live music, unfortunately we don't have our guest here tonight, but we do have something to talk about.
Darren, have you listened in your car? Well, we're still waiting for you, mate. Please don't do this on Pride Day, will you?
We love you, we forgive you, we miss you.
So Darren Carter was going to come in and talk to us about this year's Pride. Unfortunately he's not actually with us yet, but we've got same news as we always have. I'm very pleased to say Shout Out will be there broadcasting live all day. I think we're starting around 10 a.m.
Yes, that's so 10 a.m. will be a special show, 1 hour show. At 11 we go live to our studio on the Downs in Bristol, and then there'll
wait
be
the
three of us actually covering the march.
Amazing.
Live, so chatting as we have done in the last few years. So it'd be Ez, Lucy and myself actually on the march and chatting to the people, feeding back to the studio on the Downs, and then after the march passes us by, which probably take a while.
It does take a while. It's longer every year.
Can you
see the end yet, Steph?
No. Yeah. No.
I've been here an hour. No.
Isn't that wonderful? I love that. Yeah. And I'm always like on my tiptoes, like that's going to help.
Yeah. So, and then we start covering the main stage.
Yes. Yeah. It's always very interesting to listen to how many different ways Steph can describe what people are wearing.
Yeah. It is.
Over
glorious.
The course of an hour and something of march.
Rainbow.
Going past, so but yeah, and Boogaloo Stew is back this year. He is hosting the main stage. Yes. I did find was it last year he wasn't there? I think it was last year he wasn't able to make it. And it was because he had something else that was already booked. It was
he's very tall, isn't he?
But he also wears high heels as well.
Really high heels.
He wears platforms that are about 10 inches, and his hair
is a foot high, isn't it?
It's
yeah.
Amazing.
And yeah, he's absolutely brilliant, always gets the audience going. Well worth it. I was hoping we could talk to that because, of course, this year's headline is an interesting choice.
It is.
I've heard her music and it's actually very, very good, but it's the first time I think I've ever known a headliner get announced and we all go, who?
I'd never heard of her.
I thought it was because I was old.
Well, I think it's partly that, as in like over 25s.
Yeah, I think it's an age.
I was also sort of reflecting on the three main performers of the main stage this year. I mean, everyone's a main performer, but the three toward the end of the day. Because we've got Cascada, which is my generation, absolutely. Kim Wilde is also sort of my generation, but I think 80s-ish, 70s, 80s,
90s. She was 80s.
And then we've got Ali X, which I would say is probably, I mean, she's 39. I think she's been around for about 10-15 years. Sorry if that's wrong.
Huge in Canada.
Yeah,
Ali X.
Absolutely massive.
Very.
And actually, performatively, she's quite stunning. Yeah. So I think as a live performance, it's going to be very good.
For me personally, I can't wait. I'm hoping we get to interview Ultranate.
Yeah, me too.
Because that was my Ibiza time when I was like 18, 19. And of course, Free was a massive break. Club hit and found a cure and the like. It'd be great if we get to interview her.
Isn't it quite a privilege that for a long time, is it 10 years now, we've been broadcasting from Pride? The privilege that we have to interview all these big names, you know, and get
amazing.
To meet them, you know, like Sophie Ellis-Bextor. And
who's not there this year, I should point out. She is headlining elsewhere.
Sonique was funny. Yeah.
No, we should point out there is a very serious reason we do it, because of course we know there are a lot of people who are not able to be out and be comfortable going to something as big as Pride, and the whole reason we started in the first place wasn't just for the fun of being part of it and that, but it was also about that outreach. So, you know, if you are concerned about going but you still want to be part of it, we will be live all day long, streaming on our website and across Bristol on BCFM, which is on 93.2 and DAB, so you can tune in and still be part of it, and you also get the exclusives, because you will get to hear things that people there won't, because we talk to the acts and we get to talk to them about their performance on stage and what it means performing at Pride, and you always find out amazing things, don't you? Remember Claire from H told us she was one of the community, and we're like, oh, I didn't know that.
Do you mean Claire from Steps?
Steps, yeah.
Claire
sorry.
From H.
Claire from H. I'm thinking of Claire and H.
From
Steps.
Claire from H. Claire from H. Wow.
I do also want to say, you're absolutely right, Andy, but alongside that, not as well as, there are some amazing groups on Facebook and Instagram. And if you are feeling like you have nobody to come to Pride with, I can assure you there are people who would love you to come with them to Pride.
Them, yes.
You never need to feel alone. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what age you are, how you identify. Every single person is welcome and will be safe at that march. And at the actual event itself, you know, if you're sat at home listening because you want to, or because you feel you can't do it any other way, we're here for you. But if you want to be there, you can. So reach out to people.
Yeah. And it's full of families. It's very family friendly, isn't
it? Yeah, from, you know, from little tiny tots to people about your age, I reckon. 80, 85.
There are many of us more mature people there.
We're going to have a quick song because we really wanted to play this one today. When we come back, we'll tell you a little bit about things like the cabaret stage and like that's going on. But this, you two would probably be better to announce this one because you know a lot about this song. This is Kate Nash, isn't it?
Yeah, Germ. I think it's, in fact, when I looked on Facebook, the video had only been put up there for a day.
Yeah.
So it's out of the package and straight onto our record deck.
Unfortunately, you can't see the video on our Facebook because Facebook pulled it down.
They wouldn't allow it, but there is no nudity, really. She is dancing and it's all red, but she is placing her hands so that there is no real nudity. She shows her belly button. That's probably...
Oh, no, not the belly button.
Yeah.
Shocking.
Sorry.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
I've loved Kate Nash since her first single. I've seen her live. She's an incredible ally. I don't actually know how she identifies other than she, her. She's an absolute powerhouse. I adore her. She has never shut up and never been silent. Yeah. So thank you, Kate, because here is Jo.
Well, and thank their agent, because we had to contact them quickly to get the clean version. And they sent it. So thank you very much to RB and Kate Nash's agent for helping us out.
Yeah, she started with Foundations.
I'm not going to have time to play it.
Right, Foundations, Germ, go.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's the amazing Kate Nash and Germ.
Wow.
That's a clean version,
just
in case you're wondering.
There was the odd bit.
There was the odd word you could tell had been rearranging that, which is just as well. So a big thank you to Kate and her agent for sending that to us. We must see if we can get you on the show if you'd be up for it. It'd be lovely to actually talk to you about that track. It's a very, very powerful message, isn't it?
Very.
Yeah, and you know, I've read the lyrics a few times and there's just so much in it, but using feminism to erase the rights of others and endanger them is inherently unfeminist, in my opinion. It's the responsibility of a feminist to be progressive. Thank you, Kate.
Yeah.
Like, you know, fan of yours since day one, and it's so important that we've got, you know, people so singing so passionately. It's not just words, is it?
It's going to make Pride this year very different, isn't it? Because you know, it's going to be really, really about the statement of saying we're here.
Yes,
it's going to be very political,
And we can be safe.
Yes,
yeah. And it's interesting because I mean Darren and the team banned what's it parties?
Political parties. Yeah.
Political parties.
Of all
quite
types.
A while ago, many years ago.
Yeah, they were ahead of the curve. Yeah. Bristol Pride.
Yeah, but this year. This year, obviously, lots of others have jumped on it too. So, I mean, the one thing I would say, if you're listening, do go get a supporter wristband, chuck some money in the pot. Bristol Pride is still one of the only huge ones that's still free, technically.
But also,
and the wristbands are like £7 or £8, I think.
Right,
something
but
like
it gives
that.
You £10, great stuff. Okay,
£10 gives you free buses, 10% off food and drink.
A bus in Bristol for a day rider is now £7.
Yeah, and you get your wristband before you can use it to get there too.
Yeah.
So you know, and it keeps it going. I mean, you know, sometimes we forget why we do this. It's not just about the party side of it. It's also about the, you know, statement of saying we're here, and it takes a lot to organise.
It does. And I think this is less of an issue in the United Kingdom, but we must be very, very careful of what's happening with culture wars in the United States, where these right-wing trolls, TERFs and other assorted ne'er-do-wells have gone after companies that sponsor Pride or give money to Pride or sell Pride products and got them to, you know, in some cases, withdraw that money. So that makes it more difficult to organise Pride.
Yeah.
So
it even had an effect on the awards. The Shout Out Listeners Awards, I won't mention the names, but we did have some companies pull out of it because they were part American, and with everything that was going on over there, they were told to rein it back in. They said, we can't be seen to be part of an equality award.
That hasn't happened in the UK so much, but we must be very, 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 what's the word, vigilant, I think is the word for that, and definitely support Bristol Pride and the other Prides to keep them free, to keep them doing what they do so well.
And it can be a downward spiral because they're going after trans women, but then it's women, then the next thing you know, they're going after
women,
all the
lesbian women, everything that doesn't fit to whatever it is they think we should fit in.
We're good as a community, we stick together and we do. do stand our ground and say, hey, no, we're not going to stand for this.
Absolutely. People have fought it before. They fought Section 28. They fought Section 25. They fought...
I didn't know there was a Section 25.
There was a Section 25 proposed in 1991, which would have increased penalties for gay sexual offences, which all of which were later abolished. There was, you know, there have been lots and lots of times when we fought back, and we'll fight back again.
We will always be loved.
With pride.
No matter what they say.
With pride. With pride.
Well, we will try and get Darren on again so that we can talk about it and get his view and thoughts on it. If you are going to Pride this year, though, tell us your thoughts. And when you go, send us your photos. We'd love to see.
We would indeed. You can contact us via our website, socials, or plain old email. Shoutoutradio.lgbt is where you want to head for all the info.
Next week, Penny the Pigeon Queen.
Oh, yes. Can't wait.
From myself, from Terry, from Steph, and from Ez, say bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.